We'll be reading two scriptures today, starting with the book of Genesis. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, so dismayed were they at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." And they came closer. He said, "I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me there. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay. You shall settle in the land of Goshen and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children, as well as your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. I will provide for you there, since there are 5 more years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have will not come to poverty.' And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him." The second reading will be from the book of Luke. "But I say to you that listen, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you. And if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies, do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great. And you will be children of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked, but merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will put you into your lap, for the measure you give will be the measure you get back." Thus ends our reading.
So this fella was taken gravely ill one day. Started having severe stomach pains, sweating profusely, had trouble breathing. So he went to the hospital, the emergency room. And the doctors ran some tests, and after a little while, the doctor came back, and he said, "I have some bad news. It seems you have ingested a very powerful toxin, and we have no antidote for it. So you might want to call your family and friends and get your affairs in order and say goodbye to those you love." So the fellow starts making some calls, and he calls up his longtime business partner, John. And so John comes to the hospital, and he comes to his bedside, you know, and he looks at him and goes, "John, I have some things I need to confess to you. A few years ago, I embezzled $100,000 from the company. Then I sold our secret formula to our competitor. And John, I'm the one who provided your wife with all the evidence she needed to get the divorce and cost you a small fortune. Can you ever forgive me?" John looked at him and said, "Old man, don't worry. I'm the one who gave you the poison." Payback time. Yes. Payback time. Well, today we heard a story of someone of, I'm going to move this here. If anyone had a reason for payback, it was Joseph. As some of you may recall from your early Sunday school classes, the story of Joseph, if you're not familiar, I'll kind of recap it. Joseph was one of the 12 sons of Jacob. He was actually son number 11. And for whatever reason, he was Jacob's favorite son. I think it was because he was the firstborn of his beloved Rachel. I got that right. Anyway, he was a favorite son, and he let all his brothers know about it. There was a story of one time they were out tending the flock, the sheep, and Joseph came out there, and I guess they were all goofing off and doing whatever shepherds shouldn't be doing. Jacob immediately ran back and told his father Jacob about it, got the brothers in trouble. Jacob made him the coat of many colors, the robe with the long sleeves that he used to wear, flaunt it in front of his brothers. And then he had these dreams, you know, basically saying that he was going to be the best of them. He was going to, they were all going to bow down to him. Well, you know, his brothers got kind of tired of this, you know. And one day, Joseph goes out to the field to see the brothers tending the sheep, only they're not there where they're supposed to be. And he finds out they're in another place. So he goes out there, and now the brothers are thinking, well, he's probably going to rat on us to dad again, you know. And they decide to take matters in their own hand. They decide they're going to kill him. But Reuben, the oldest of the brothers, says, no, 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 we can't have our brother's blood on our hands. Now, there's a big pit nearby, so they decide, well, we'll throw him in the pit with no water and no food. I guess the theory being that if he starves to death, then they didn't actually kill him, you know, the blood's not on their hands. I don't know. You know, I thought my family was dysfunctional. But anyway, they throw him in this pit, and as it happens, a caravan of Midianites come by, and they're on their way to Egypt. And the brothers get the idea, well, we're going to sell Joseph to these Midianites. And they do that. And the Midianites take Joseph to Egypt, where they sell him to a fellow named Potiphar, who was like really a high-ranking official in Pharaoh's court. So he goes into Potiphar's house. Potiphar makes him in charge of all of his affairs. Time goes on. I guess Potiphar's wife has an eye on Joseph and wants him to come lay with her. He won't do it, so she claims that he rapes her, and he goes to prison. Now, in prison, he meets these other prisoners who are somehow connected to Pharaoh and starts interpreting their dreams. And the word gets back to Pharaoh, who has an eye for really sharp, you know, intelligent people, and decides, hey, this guy Joseph's got something going on. And so he makes Joseph eventually prime minister of Egypt. Not bad for a little brat who was going to be killed by his brothers. So he's like the prime minister of Egypt now, and as the story goes, there's a drought and a famine all over the Near East. Jacob sends his other sons to Egypt to buy grain. They go to Egypt. They meet Joseph, only they don't recognize Joseph. In fact, twice they meet him. And then the second time, he says, I'm your brother Joseph. Now the brothers are like quaking in their boots going, oh man, you know, here's our little brother. He's now the biggest, you know, he's next to the Pharaoh in Egypt. We're in for it now. But notice Joseph's response. He says, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here. Because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been a famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will be no plowing, no reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by great deliverance. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. Wow. What a response. What a response. I mean, this guy was like the second most powerful fellow in Egypt at the time. He could have had his brothers put in prison easily. But no. He says, God sent me here to preserve a place for you. So the brothers go back to Canaan. They get Jacob. They say, Joseph's still alive. Jacob doesn't believe it. They bring him to Egypt. And they all settle down. They live happily for, I don't know, a long time until they become slaves in Egypt. You know, but, you know, They're having a good time now, and it's Joseph and his brothers. Jacob dies, and here's a funny little story, too. Jacob dies, and the brothers go to Joseph and say, well, Dad said that after he's gone, you're supposed to be nice to us, you know? Well, Joseph says, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children. And he reassured them and treated them kindly. What a response. What a response. So we come to today's gospel reading from the Gospel of Luke. And this is a continuation. I remember last week we talked about Luke's version of Matthew's Sermon on the Mount. Only in Luke's version, Jesus comes down on level ground to be on the same level with the people. And he gives them the blessings. It's called the Sermon on the Plain. And I think these blessings were kind of like a little pep talk to his disciples and his followers, where he said, people are going to revile you. People are going to talk bad about you. People are going to kick dirt on you. But you will be blessed, because when they do so, your reward will be great. And he goes a little farther. He says, when these people kick dirt on you, when they revile you, when they talk about you, don't pay back. Treat them with love. Treat them with kindness. Pray for them. Now, that's a real radical statement in this time. Because you got to remember, in this first century, Israel, the norm was retribution, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Jesus says, no, we can't do that. We're to treat people with love. Jesus presents a new standard, a nonviolent, positive approach to any form of hostility. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, offer your shirt. Wow. I don't know about all of you, but that seems like a pretty tough order, you know? We're just human beings. I don't know how many times I've heard people say, and I've said it myself, loving your enemies, that might be good for saints, but I'm not a saint. Forgiving those who have really hurt me, well, that's fine for Jesus, but I'm not Jesus. No, I'm not. None of us are. I don't expect to see anyone in this room walking on water in the near future. I don't want to see anybody turning water into wine unless you first stomp the grapes and go through the fermentation process. But what we are called to do is to act like Jesus, to be Christian. I believe that if I'm going to accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, I'm going to have to follow his teachings, all of them. I can't just pick and choose the ones I want to do. I need to follow all those teachings. And that calls me to love those who have harmed me, to forgive. And we have a real challenge ahead of us in making amends with the people of opposing views. That takes patience and compromise. Yet this is precisely what Jesus wants his followers to do. In fact, he even took it a step further, and he goes on and says, give to anyone who begs from you. And if anyone takes your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you. Jesus is advocating a behavior that is totally opposite from revenge. He says, turn the other cheek. Give. Dr. Keith Wagner states, to love our enemies prevents us from acting out of our own self-interest. It means that forgiveness is at the very core of our faith. It means that to do harm to others in any way is totally out of the question. It means that we are to live by a higher standard, one that leads us to a new and different world which transcends the one in which we live. Because I look around the world today and I still think that payback is the norm today. We need to forgive. It may seem hard. We need to love our enemies. That may seem like a tough order, but consider the alternative. Look what's happening in the Middle East. Look what happens when a Palestinian suicide bomber blows himself up in a marketplace in Jerusalem. Israel responds by sending some missiles into the West Bank. Maybe it happens in reverse. I don't know, but it just creates this vicious cycle of violence and retribution that will destroy us. Jesus calls us to break that cycle by taking a road that does not seek revenge. Someone has to take the first step and model a behavior that sets the stage for peace and harmony. That, my friends, is us. Genuine people of faith use restraint and love their enemies. I like to tell this story. It's an excerpt from a sermon given by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King says, "My brother and I were driving one evening to Chattanooga, Tennessee, from Atlanta. He was driving the car, and for some reason, the drivers were very discourteous that night. They didn't dim their lights. Hardly any driver that passed by dimmed his lights. And I remember very vividly, my brother A.D. looked over, and in a tone of anger, he said, 'I know what I'm going to do. The next car that comes along here and refuses to dim their lights, I'm going to fail to dim mine and pour them on in all their power.' I looked at him right quick and said, 'Oh no, brother, don't do that. There'd be too much light on this highway, and it will end up in mutual destruction for all. Somebody's got to have some sense on this highway. Somebody must have sense enough to dim the lights. And that's the trouble, isn't it? If somebody doesn't have sense enough to dim the lights, the whole of our civilization will be plunged into the abyss of destruction, and we will all end up destroyed because nobody had any sense on that highway of history.'" People, we need to let go of our anger. We need to let go of those resentments that eat at us, like a cancer. I've heard it said that holding on to a resentment is like taking poison, hoping the other person will die. And I've heard it said, "Well, that's good advice, Mark, but maybe how do we do this? You know, maybe in these sermons, maybe you should give us a little lesson on how to let go of this anger, how to let go of these resentments." I found one pretty effective method. I found it through the literature of 12-step recovery programs. And it has specifically to do with letting go of anger, letting go of resentments, and forgiveness. It's a three-step process. The first step is to write down, take pen and paper, and write down the reasons you're angry with someone. Write down why it is you're angry, what they did that caused you harm. The writing clarifies emotions which may have been confused and buried in us. And sometimes these emotions, these feelings have been buried for years. Also, when you write down your grievances, when you put them on paper in black and white, you can place a boundary around them. The hurt had a beginning, and it can have an end. The second step is to consider telling a very trusted person how you're feeling. Let it go. And then release the hurt. I may be burning or tearing up that paper. A friend of mine has what he calls the God box. When he's feeling resentful, when he feels someone has harmed him, he writes it down. He meditates on it. He talks about it. Then he puts that piece of paper in a box. He lets it go to God. And the third step, and most important, is to pray. Pray for the willingness to forgive. And pray, most importantly, pray for that person who has caused you harm. Pray for that person who wronged you. Pray daily and ask God to bless them with the good things you want for yourself. If you keep praying faithfully, sooner or later, your feelings will change. And when your feelings change, when you find yourself being sincere and asking God to bless your former enemy, then you will know you have forgiven them. Payback time. Our first reaction when someone has done us wrong is to strike back. And as a flesh and blood victim of a horrible crime, Joseph had all the reason in the world to look for his chance for payback. But there's a better way. Joseph knew it, and I hope we know it too. Ask yourself, do I need to forgive someone? And remember, to forgive is to put down that 50-pound pack after a 10-mile hike up the mountain. To forgive is to fall into a chair after running a marathon. To forgive is to set a prisoner free and discover that prisoner was you. And then you'll know the meaning of that ancient spiritual that says, free at last, free at last. Good God Almighty, I am free at last. Thank you.